podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hi, everyone. So here we are, Lucy, the end of the season and your final pod as co-host. It's been a long one, trying at times, and ultimately one which ended with a semi-flourish, I suppose, after an oddly entertaining leak-a-thon on Sunday. All of this brought to a close, the season pockmarked by double game weeks due to scheduling obstacles, like the Queen dying and stuff like that, as FPL manager to be more nimble than ever in navigating the onslaught of fixtures to varying success. And I guess that'll be what we talk about today, looking over the season that was. I'm back with Lucy, as I mentioned, for a final time. You all right?
I'm all right, thank you. I think I'm still digesting the end of the season, not least because Southampton somehow scored 4 goals and I somehow got a green arrow. But anyway, we are Who Got the Assist. You can find Tom on the main account at WGTA_FPL, and you can find me at Lucy Hynek with 2 T's. On the pod today, unsurprisingly, we'll be looking back at the 2022-23 season. We'll review our own seasons, what worked and what didn't. We'll touch on why this season felt, to us at least, a bit more draining than others, although we'll try to keep things upbeat. Tom will make 3 predictions for 23-24, as I'll be out of here by then. And finally, we'll award our players of the season in every category. We're recording on Wednesday, the 31st of May, but who really cares?
Exactly. I'm sure this might be something people listen to right away, or maybe they'll come back to it in June or something like that. Yeah.
Or maybe they'll come back to it in a year's time and laugh at our predictions.
Maybe. But I'll probably make the same predictions if I do the pod again next year. So, yeah, you know, it'll only be 73 days until the start of the Premier League season, which must mean there's a championship start the week before, doesn't it? So
yeah, usually, yeah.
Even shorter amount of days. Why can't I do 73 minus 7 in my head right now? This is really bad. I've only just started drinking. Oh, awful, awful. 66 days until the championship resumes. So, wow, it doesn't feel like very long, does it, when you put it like that? But hey, shall we get right into it and just talk about game reviews and season reviews? But first, actually, how do you feel as an ex-manager?
Weird. I still feel like, because I'm recording, I feel like I'm still an active manager. I think it'll really sink in when everyone's picking their teams and I won't have anything to do.
Yeah, maybe the FOMO is going to get you and you end up doing what our good friend Hindu Monkey does every year and go, oh, I'm not playing. And then, you know, within a few weeks of the game reopening, it turns out that obviously he started playing or made a team and he's obviously been thinking about it a lot. So maybe that would be you. Who knows? But I'm sure you'll stick to your guns. But yeah, I think it'll maybe kick in a bit later because obviously now it's just proper off season. So that final day, I mean, I found that more fun because of the leaks than the day. I mean, the day itself was cool, you know, hearing all the goals and seeing everything that was going off all at the same time of all those games going on. But the leaks was great fun. It was like kind of a proper whodunit every kind of few minutes. There's a new bit of information. You know, you're like, oh, who is this? Oh, can I trust this? Oh, this is good. Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. And then you see something from like Andy, that's okay. And you're like, yeah, well, that's true. All right, we can go with that. But there's other stuff. It was like, you know, Matoma being on the bench, there was like a couple of dodgy accounts who were coming through with that. So it was quite, yeah, it was quite like a trail of information that everyone was kind of chasing around, which is great. Like you were, you didn't partake too much, but you did surface, didn't you? Even with an hour to go or something after saying last week, yeah, I won't be around. I'll be in a pub somewhere.
In my defense, I know I said last week that I was very happy to let the deadline madness pass me by, and I didn't really expect to be in any position to respond. But what I hadn't worked out when I recorded last week was that our check-in for our Airbnb was 3 o'clock, which obviously was deadline, and we needed to get there, and it was about an hour's drive. So, and I don't drive, my husband drives, so I didn't really have a choice, did I, but to log on the app and maybe drop you a few messages and then maybe look at Twitter a few times.
Oh, dear. It's the last time. It's like the last cigarette or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it was literally that. Well, you told me, didn't you, to give that defence to my husband. So I did. It didn't really work. He was very despairing of the fact that I was sat there fiddling about, but it was good fun.
Is Tom also giving up next year? Or is Tom...
We're in no FPL household. He's raging particularly because he's gone from about 50k to about 300k.
Right. So, okay. Yeah, it's a good time for him to just step away for a bit.
Yeah.
Got you. As for the final day itself, I'll let you go second because I think you did better than I did. So I end up with 59 minus 4 on the final day. Kane came in for Haaland really early on. We got that news, I'm going to say around kind of 1 o'clock that he wasn't playing. So that became academic for you to do that. And then the last minute move I did was Odegaard in for Matoma. Lots of whispers that the Japanese wasn't playing, which did prove to be correct. But Odegaard somehow managed to dodge all the points in a 5-0 victory for Arsenal. A bit despairing. Very meh, really, with the 59 minus 4. I wish I'd captain Kane, but I was on Salah. And, you know, we talk about Min League tactics of the week. The reason I did Salah was because I thought my Min League rival would captain Kane, and it was really close to the two of us. As it was, he managed to take a minus 20 because he bought Kane and then sold Kane and then bought him back again because of he mistakenly sold him, he said. But probably the beers were flowing in his household. So I won that mini league. But because I didn't captain Kane and I captained Salah, two other mini leagues which were a bit closer, I lost those on the final day, including one that I thought was in the bag. I think it was like a 16-point swing or something like that for not going with Kane. So, I hoped I could win out the differentials. Didn't work. One the main mini league I wanted to win, which was the work one, but I lost two other mini leagues kind of in one go, which was a bittersweet sort of outcome. Else I didn't really get, I got kind of the returns everyone else got. The only one that I did get was different, which was a David De Gea pen save. What? I mean, that's
insane.
Once in a lifetime. I was hoping that would
in
be
his
like
life, we mean.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, he's an absolute pants at that, isn't he? But I was hoping that would be the one thing that would propel me to win one particular mini league. And I think I was 3 points behind, 3 points behind it, kind of after that save. So if they'd kept the clean sheet, but obviously they didn't. And yeah, so yeah, that was it. Really, a bit of a if that happened any time other in the season other than the final day, we'd have been thinking, oh, it's a bit of a crap week. Let's forget about it. But obviously, final day.
But that's pretty green arrow, though, right?
Yeah, it was a green arrow, yeah. So I went up to 16.8K, which is where I ended up. What about you?
Yeah, after one green arrow in 8 weeks, I was starting to forget what they looked like, really. But yes, having gone through the madness, I obviously did that Haaland to Kane move that pretty much everyone made. I think, you know, you were saying about it being fun. I think it was basically because we had quite a lot of reliable leaks, so you felt some confidence with going with them. I think if we'd had lots of tentative leaks from lots of random accounts, I think it would have felt a bit more annoying and not so fun. But because we had some ones that we felt we could act on, I think that probably made it more interesting. And then, of course, when those Matoma rumours gathered pace, I don't think they were ever confirmed, were they, before the deadline, but there was kind of strong...
No.
I decided that I'd use the money in the bank, a bit I already had, and a bit that obviously was generated from Haaland Kane. I was basically left with two choices: to either upgrade Matoma himself, probably looking at Odegaard, or as I kind of looked at it a bit closely, Isak to Jesus was the other option. And luckily for me, I went with the latter. So I made a very tasty net 22 points on my transfers.
Ooh, that's good. Very good. Yeah, we both said about Jesus last week, didn't we? And
you did. Yeah, you were the one that was pushing him, weren't you?
It's just because I was making that decision kind of, you know, at the very last minute. I just didn't have the time to do, or at least, you know when you're making a decision that the two minutes to deadline, yeah, you're kind of like, well, I don't have the time to consider all these options. I'm just going to, right, oh, you guys like to play for Arsenal, off we go. And yeah, no, it's very astute, as it turned out, to go for Jesus.
So that was part of 66 minus 4, which took me from 51K to 35K. I, like you, Captain Salah, so I could have got an even bigger green arrow if I'd gone for Kane. I just felt Saints would concede a lot, which turned out to be right. And I thought Leeds would be more competitive with Spurs in a distant bid to stay in the league. That turned out to be not so right. But I'm pretty at peace with it. I think we were unlucky for there to be such a big gap between Salah and Kane.
Yeah, four goals to Liverpool as well. I mean, you know, again, it's reminiscent of the 9-0, isn't it? We were kind of like, where's Salah points?
Yeah, exactly. It's just one of those things. So I'm pretty at peace with that. Yeah, are we kind of going to move on to kind of broader?
Yeah, so you signed off top 50K, is it 35K, something like that? You ended your illustrious FPL career on, I mean, season long, we obviously had fairly similar teams for an awful lot of it. How would you describe how your season went?
Well, I guess 10K is my usual target. I do think maybe on reflection, 10K probably needs to move as a target for super engaged managers, because I think there is just a lot more of those people now competing for those positions. So I'm not, you know, super pleased, but given that I finished outside the top 100K for the first time last season and was pretty irritated by the whole experience, I think I'll take the recovery. I think I learned some of the lessons from last season, with the exception of one or two, which we'll get onto. So I'm fairly happy. I think I'd have probably felt differently if I hadn't had the green arrow in 38, to be quite honest. It was feeling very kind of drudgy and pretty hopeless, given it would have been, you know, one green in nine or something ridiculous. So, you know, maybe the positive end of the season is slightly changing my position. But I think I'm pretty content, if not happy, not delighted. It'll do. How about you?
It'll do. Okay, excellent. I mean, I posted on Twitter this kind of little story, but yeah, I feel like it cracked Arsenal's a bit, probably more in spirit than in detail. So it was a really strong start. We both got a really strong start, didn't we? And then through the first and into the second third of the season, I was really sailing. And I think the thing that really turned it around was the FA Cup results being so freak. And basically, and unwittingly, that meant I wasted my free hit in 25. And from there, the position felt a bit more false, compounded by triple captaining Haaland for that one goal against Spurs versus Rashford, obviously with the 40 points, or sorry, 20 points. So those were points lost that I was never going to get back. But I mean, a whole load of things happened at the end of the season, which I'll discuss in a second. But a few other things, I stayed fairly immune to an Ings level player overlook. I don't think there's particularly one this season I could point to and say, oh, I missed out on that, and that's why I didn't do as well as I could have done. I think it was only Almiron I stayed resistant to over a long stretch. I don't think either of us actually got him until...
It was too late, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think World Cup when he came in for me.
Yeah, same. So
completely missed the boat on him. And the other individual actually only came through when I looked at FPL optimized data, which I'll mention in a minute. I definitely learned a lot of lessons. You mentioned that, and I definitely did, you know, from you, we should probably say. So keep it simple, stupid. Don't be shooting for the moon. We don't need to shoot for the moon. Just shoot for the net. That's always quite good. And just careful management over the main body of the season kind of shepherded me into a good place, kind of, you know, two thirds through the season. But after that, it was binaries that did it for me. So Martinelli to Odegaard. I can't really begrudge that one too much, actually, because it made sense at the time. But the end in particular was really vicious, because I was doing all right until kind of game week 34, 35. It was all kind of recoverable. But two decisions, I'd say, going for Dunk over Estupiñán, that was kind of an avoidable kind of mistake. And then the other one was a kind of a hindsight one. That's Isaac over Wilson. Those loads of points that I was never going to make back. And that happened so late in the season as well. It just hit like a truck, really, for OR. It meant that kind of the top 10K was almost never going to happen. I think even if I captained Kane this week and I'd managed to buy like Ducore or something like that, it was still going to be probably out of reach. But I mean, going back to the Arsenal point, it feels underwhelming, because even if it is my best season since WGTA began, my best season for a while, losing the 2 million leagues on the final day and flying high during the season, I was almost 5K at one point before having to settle from a still objectively great position I'd have taken with enthusiastic gratitude at the start of the season, still felt a bit, don't know, it left me a bit of a flat feeling. It's one of those, isn't it, where do you prefer, I think it was, I can't remember who wrote it, I think it was a Matt FPL Obsessed wrote it on Twitter, like, would you prefer, you know, being 10K and then dropping to 30K on the final day, or being 80K and jumping up to 40K on the final day? Which one would you prefer? And I think the latter leaves you feeling better, doesn't it? Like a last minute equaliser is better than kind of being equalised against the last minute, if that makes sense. Even though, I'll forget about it.
I think maybe you're being slightly harsh on your season, just because I think you had quite a good string of kind of luck and bounce and judgment. And I think lots of things combined to give you like this really strong sense of momentum.
Mm.
And because it kind of fell away a little bit at the end, it feels a lot worse than if you'd had it all reversed, if you'd started badly.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been great, wouldn't it? Yeah, that kind of the recovery narrative is always is always much better than decline narrative, a managed decline narrative. And I did note the review told me I was very lucky this year compared to other years. So, you know, there was that strong start, and maybe, you know, I got to a point basically where I just couldn't lose that far, really. Like, there was no chance I wasn't going to finish the top 100K after, kind of, apart from some sort of catastrophic failure, which wasn't going to happen because I was actively managing my team after about, say, maybe about game week 25. There was no chance I wasn't going to finish the top 100K, I don't think, when I was 5K. So, I mean, maybe it was kind of a mixture of luck not going my way. Maybe I could have, they could have, maybe like with Duncan Estupinian, that was another example of, okay, a mind decision, but something that maybe if I had my time again, I should.
Are you putting that down as your biggest regret then?
No, I'm not. No, I will come to that in a second. But I'm going to give myself a B+ for this season. I think there's still room for improvement, but obviously happy with how it's turned out. And yeah, and that question, Jono Forward, he asked it last week, but we moved it to this week. What is your biggest FPL regret of the season, apart from making a team, lol? Yeah, I mean, what was yours?
I was kind of mulling this one over. I think I spoke earlier in the season about using too many transfers on chancy defender picks that probably wasted transfers. I probably ended up using a lot more transfers at the beginning of the season on defenders than I really needed to. And, you know, at the time I was quite irritated with myself, but I could at least see the kind of high ceiling motivation of buying the likes of Reece James and Ben Chilwell back when Chelsea weren't managed by Frank Lampard. So I'm not going to dwell on that one too much. I think that's probably just, I got into a kind of little pattern of play, which was partly forced by injuries and partly kind of slightly iffy management, but I'm kind of at peace with that one. So I think for me, the greatest regret was probably losing my nerve in the final weeks. And I'm particularly frustrated by it because I think I did it last season as well. So for game week 33, I felt very exposed to Salah. I spoke about that openly on the pod about how I might accelerate my move towards Salah with hits and stuff. And at the same time, the rumours of a Bruno Fernandes injury surfaced with that picture that was widely distributed. And instead of holding my nerve and waiting for news on Bruno and finding a different route to Salah, I made the swap. Despite the fact I spent, you know, a couple of weeks being really positive about Bruno because he'd regained his number 10 spot and looked much better. And that basically gave me two problems. One, that Bruno kept scoring points, which did nothing for my rank. And two, forced me into a kind of slightly awkward situation with transfers further down the line because I had to bring him back in. Yeah. I don't think it's like being catastrophic for my season. I don't think I'd have hit 10K anyway. But I think it's probably brought me down 5 or 10,000 places just through the kind of weird little maneuvers I then had to do as a result of that loss of nerve. And it's slightly reminiscent of the Kane-Son swap I did last year, albeit not quite so catastrophic and not for such a long period. But yeah, I that one irritates me because I think I had the strategy right and I lost my nerve. So that's the one I'm going to say.
Yeah, that's frustrating, isn't it? I mean, to be honest, I can't even remember my own name, let alone what happened last week, nor in kind of game week 8 at the moment, just through having a young baby. So I got to this question. I was thinking, oh, Odegaard, Martinelli, you know, Wilson. I did think it might be quite good to have a look at FPL Optimized. I'll put links to it under the pod on Twitter and looked at kind of what the key miss was this season for me. And you know what? The one kind of huge mistake in inverted commas was not Wilson, nor was it not buying Estupinian back. It was not owning Kepa after the World Cup because I overforced it and went to Ramsdale. And so according to Optimized, Kepa had the highest net negative impact of any player on my outcomes this season. So Kepa was my main rank destroyer this season.
As someone who owned Kepa, I am.
There was that period after the World Cup, wasn't there, where he just, I think it was between game week 17 and 22, when he managed 44 points, whereas Ramsdale only managed 26 in that period. And I also managed to bench Ramsdale for the biggest haul of that era, and also the biggest haul of the season, 11 points versus Spurs away when we won North London Derby 2-0. So, I mean, it's very weird. Like, I also found that really ironic as well, because long-term listeners will remember there was a time last season where I couldn't stop changing goalkeepers around. Whereas this year, I've been quite, you know, I've had a goalkeeper all the time and not expended that many transfers on them, but still, it's been my kind of lowest scoring position, my top goalkeeper is David Raya, who only entered my team at the end of the season. So, you know, very bizarre. One of those is not buying Kepa my main regret. Looking at the data, yeah, it probably should be. In reality, no, because you
sound like a lunatic.
Yeah, basically. Yes, it's not an emotive one, is it? And I think not going back to my man Estupinian and choosing Dunk instead probably is. I mean, it was such a huge punch to my game week and overall rank that week, and also
it was such a freak score.
I know, but I mean, what hurt more though, as I said at the time, was that I was one of the earliest adopters of him. I spotted those cavalier position defying runs he was making, and the irony of going with Dunk for expected minutes, and the guy didn't even show up for the last two games because of whatever the hell De Zerbi was doing. So.
That applies to a lot of Brighton recently.
I know, but that one probably is the bigger one for me, I think, just because I loved Estupinian. I was a bit of an idiot. Stuff like free hit 25 or Haaland triple captain, I don't regret those, but you know, I think that's probably where it is anyway. And yeah, positive moment of the season, Estupinian assisting Matoma when they were both under 10% owned. I mean, that was huge for me. What about you?
I can barely remember what happened.
It's all gone now.
I guess the Marcus Rashford, I know everyone had it, so it wasn't that surprising, but I was genuinely surprised to get 20 points off the Marcus Rashford triple captain. I didn't expect that. So
yeah,
I think my chip play has kept me going this season at times when I've run out of momentum. I think chip play has basically saved me. I think that's probably where our, you know, as much as our seasons were quite similar and our teams were quite similar for long periods, I think. Whereas I haven't been so good at finding those kind of week by week differentials, I think probably my chips have been really positive. Whereas you might have a bit more frustration around how that luck fell.
Yeah, it didn't. They weren't particularly good apart from the bench boost, effectively, and the wild cards were both quite, you know, regulation, I guess. Let's do a final mini league update then. Last time we checked, Blaise Pecorzi was top, and he finished 19th. Fortunately, so no Wilson in 36, bench Trippier in 37. He's had a couple of really terrible outcomes. So sorry, Blaze. As it is, here's the top 10. So in 10th is Matt Fuchs with grossly undavstated, like it. 10th, up to 10th from 37th. In joint 7th, there's three. Lawrence Kazmir, Bruno Onetto, 65. Mark Azar, Ten Hag's Kisses, 60. And Anthony Eid, FPL Simpson on Twitter, with 64 points. Joint 5th is X to please Mark James, and Imf go Maith Michael Scott, 64 and 67 for them. In 4th is Biel Salona James Clark with 66. In 3rd is Zishan Bimani, 70. In 2nd, staying in 2nd, is Mark Bleakley, 42 next, 82 points, and winning it by 8 points, it's Josiah Veredasdian of Lofty Spirit of 66 points this week. I think we missed the memo, Lucy, because everybody apart from Anthony in 7th, Captain Kane. Everyone,
yeah,
I really missed them. Fair play. Must have just missed the memo, and it must have been loads of people who dropped out of the top 10 on the last day because it was really close last time we checked. So, yeah, incredible stuff, right? The season that was, let's have a little dig into this, shall we? I've kind of got three reasons here why the season was peculiarly. Draining, shall we say, or maybe it was quite a difficult season in many ways to be content creating for. And I know that some people don't like the overt negativity. But just to underline, this isn't idiotic negativity. I'm not saying it's shite, lol. This is more of a kind of reasoned analysis of why the season was quite tough, maybe as a content creator, maybe as an engaged player, to find those sort of moments of joy that make FPL sort of worth playing to me. It may not be how you've experienced it, that's absolutely fine, but you know, worth listening to just to kind of hear, especially because we've had loads of seasons under our belt, how this one was slightly different. But I think there's kind of three reasons why. I'll kind of, after each one, I'll kind of just stop for a second, see what you think, Lucy. I think there's three reasons why this season was quite a difficult one for content creators and for me personally to enjoy. The first was pricing. Fairly obvious, and most of it, actually, we have to let FPL off for. We can't be blaming FPL for a lot of this, I don't think, because Arsenal, Newcastle and Brighton were dirt cheap compared to highly priced assets elsewhere. They kind of anticipated how they would have outperformed the expectations. We had a season like the Leicester season, where Leicester won it, when they won it, sorry, due to the fact that previous premiums weren't sustaining enough consistency compared to cheaper options who were much more worth our time. Throwing favourable doubles for cheap players like Bryce and Newcastle, and we'd really had it in terms of team value really mattering. And even when I tried to flex team value, like Kevin De Bruyne, it totally failed as well. So, hey, it's fair to say the next season won't be like this. We don't tend to see price-based decision-making being totally eradicated from the game in such a radical way. So next year, I'm sure we'll see the return of those lovely 50-50 calls we all know and love between owning premium asset B or premium asset A. I think the only thing we can blame FPL for is the Rashford underprice. To drop him from 9.5 to 6.5 felt heavy-handed, given the facts of his pedigree, I suppose, and in the cold light of hindsight, looks a bit silly. I know he had a bad season last season, I think it was like 63 points, but before that he was getting kind of 170, 180, actually got a joint 200 club this year. So I think that that was a bit the kind of main oversight by FPL. But yeah, I mean, number one, really pricing, but mostly kind of the knock-on impact of that being the team value was irrelevant because we could all own the template pretty easily. Seem fair?
I'm going to be a bit more critical of FPL on this one. Because I think when we looked at those Arsenal prices, as much as we didn't see those players delivering 200 points or close to 200 points,
yeah,
I think a lot of people thought that they were quite lowly priced. I think Martinelli was very popular for that reason amongst engaged players because 6 million seemed like a ridiculously good deal for someone who hadn't had minutes on a consistent basis, in all honesty, but had good underlying data. I think there was an expectation that if he could get decent minutes, he'd deliver, you know, albeit not to it, because I mean, they're delivering kind of a £9-10 million player volume at the moment. But, you know, he could easily deliver, you know, £7 or 8 million worth of value, I think, when we saw that. And I think that Jesus price reveal, I remember lots of people going, what? How cheap?
Yeah,
and I know that their opening fixtures were really good. So in a sense, it made the decisions for us because those fixtures seemed worth getting on. But I do think Saka was probably about right priced, you know, judging on previous seasons and stuff. But I just feel like a few of them were a bit low. I felt the fact you could get into their defence for £4.5 million was a bit low. So, yeah, probably they've been, you know, taken to a whole new level by the way Arsenal overperformed. But I do think even if Arsenal had been just a regular top six team, we'd have looked back at those prices as being quite generous.
I think Arsenal definitely, I guess, for the main tranche of the season, but I think being able to fill out, especially later on in the season when you're looking to differentiate, and something that we'll come on to in a little bit actually, when you're looking to differentiate and you're basically locked into owning these Brighton and Newcastle assets, and it's not difficult to own them, you know, there's no sort of negotiation, oh, can I fit in Salah, Mane, Robertson, Trent, how do I make it all work? So, oh, they're all dirt cheap, so it's absolutely fine. There's no sort of scope to differentiate if the template is bloody obvious.
We were considering our transfers last week when we were like, oh, we can't really touch our midfield because there are two Brighton in there and they're just such good value you wouldn't touch them. That is a massive problem.
Yeah, the template being obvious is my second one, really. It's kind of all a bit of a heterogeneous gloop, but it's the prevalence of EO knowledge and algorithms. They've eroded this season, at least, risk-taking behaviour amongst managers who have become more au fait with FPL. So the critical mass of the herd has grown and the template has become more robust than ever. I'm going to fold in how the calendar fell here because it's a symptom of this sort of grander theme. You know, the FA Cup results, as mentioned, were so freak that by game week 26, we knew how the entire season was going to play out. And that kind of, I guess, remove the aura of mystique around FPL a little bit because, oh, this is bloody obvious. And maybe that's kind of quite unique because of the way the FA Cup results were. But nonetheless, these conditions exacerbated optimization and by extension, a big herd that was optimized as influencers pretty much en masse embraced FPL review and made the template two things uniquely, uber powerful and algorithm approved. And I don't think those have ever really come together before in such a heavy way. However, there was a question which I've got, which was first posed by a friend of the pod, Mitchell Sterling. He said, are algos really guiding everyone to the same team? Or in the case of this season, were they literally just telling us Brighton have loads of games and their players are cheap? I mean, it's definitely something worth bearing in mind. And maybe, you know, it's worth stress testing that idea against the season, like next season, hopefully will be, barring no sort of big world issues, with just regular blanks and doubles, because we've not really had one of those for quite a few years. But I mean, this year, I think more than anything, paradoxically, we have more decisions to make because, you know, what are you going to do with all the chips? How are you going to make it all work? And the decisions were kind of bigger, I guess, than ever before. And that kind of led to more cautious decision making in loads of ways, because people lurch towards the authority, lurch towards influencers, lurch towards somebody in the know in the face of uncertainty. And when there was kind of this sort of, oh, what do we do with our chips now? The FA Cup's done this. What do I do? Oh, okay, here's a really obvious strategy. Everyone fell into it, because they just didn't want to kind of make or go through sort of a smaller kind of set of decisions themselves. It's a big decision to make, easier to look at other people. And I wonder whether, paradoxically, next season, with less decisions, we may see less herdedness in some ways, because people will be less afraid, perhaps, to make individual decisions, because it's not going to feel like you're messing up the entire season, which you kind of were this year if you didn't go with the herds in loads of ways, if you kind of forge your own path. So maybe we'll see differentials flourish a bit more next year. But yeah, it really felt like this year, a robust template, like a more robust template than I think we've ever seen, leaking over into captaincy with perma-captain Haaland, has really kind of, you know, I think you said when you part of the reason you weren't enjoying the game as much anymore was because of how the template had hardened and how difficult it was to make gains within it. So, I mean, what do you think about that?
I think I broadly agree. I think the point about there being lots of decisions and people being quite cautious about them, I think in the second half of the season, there were a lot of decisions, but there were a lot of decisions, you know, as Mitchell Sterling said, with the whole, well, Brighton have a lot of fixtures and they're worth owning. I think there were a lot of decisions with kind of very obvious answers. And I don't know if that was just because of content creation or just because of the fixtures and the way that it all unfolded made those decisions quite obvious. And I think the other thing we perhaps haven't touched on much is that obviously with those opportunities we had to keep resetting our team, yes, that also bled into the template. But I think that was because we were also being able to optimize around a smaller block of fixtures, which we don't normally have the luxury of.
Yeah,
we'll always make things a little bit more template because, you know, a set of teams has the best set of fixtures, so we all sort of gravitate towards those teams. And I think the fixture schedule is kind of partly why certain teams came completely off the agenda, because they didn't have double game weeks or they didn't have particularly advantageous fixtures, because we were all trying to get the most out of those doubles. Some just completely faded off the radar, which also contributed to the whole template feel of the season, I think.
I do wonder, because they were sort of, so there were still big decisions, weren't they, to be made? I mean, that it was kind of like, you know, season defining, I guess, the chips. I do kind of wonder whether, yes, it was kind of blinding the obvious and made blinding the obvious by the fact that you've got great people like Ben Crellin, James from Planet FPL, who look through all of it and just kind of say, right, this is what you do. And there were some alternative routes you could have gone. You could have obviously kept your free hit for 34 or kept it even further or bench boosted later or bench boosted earlier. But the effectiveness of the main sort of strategy, I guess, also led towards that. But I don't know, it was just... It's just kind of the erosion of edges, I guess, is kind of the main crux of this, really. Mm. So seeing a player, I don't know, like Matoma, growing from a very, very low EO to, you know, the differential kind of window disappears a lot faster.
So
fast now. Whereas it used to be sort of, you know, you've got at least kind of 3 or 4 weeks of...
One or two,
the player.
Though,
yeah, it's yeah. got it, you know, next week, and you saw it with you know on the double game for Brighton, where, you know, his EO was over 100% suddenly, and you're like, well, hang on, this player was like owned by like 10% of the people, 10% of the people last week. Like, you know, it's incredible how that sort of develops, and Isak as well in game week 37. I guess it obviously in the rarefied air of the top 100K, people are necessarily more engaged, but. It just felt like the template this year was more robust than ever, and the edges were harder and harder to come by. That's for sure. The final one is a bit of a contentious one, actually, but I think it was this idea of key asset staying power. So this is my friend, Bernardo's Maldonado, who mentioned this. So one key advantage in the past, or at least many people have tended to be good at, so notably, Matt's very good at this, Bernardo knows, and also Late Riser. is making up ground through being better at assessing those lesser-owned players, finding opportunities to make under-the-radar picks, getting in players from bottom-half teams that have good runs coming up, captain players that few will have or think to captain. And this has been kind of a season which has been unkind to managers who do that, so don't play that well in the template and want to always kind of find their own edge. But the fixture runs haven't been particularly pointful. So it used to be that you'd have a Watford defender or a Burnley defender or something like that for a kind run. But we've ignored, and maybe this is symptomatic of the fact that the team value's been irrelevant. This season, we've ignored loads of teams. Like, loads of teams have not even touched our mentions. Everton, Southampton, Nottingham Forest, Bournemouth, Palace, Leeds. I don't think we've barely mentioned any of those teams. And in some ways, all you had to do was not mess around with doing anything but keeping Raya all season, an Arsenal defender, Trippier, two Arsenal mids, Rashford, Captain Haaland, Salah or Kane. And that's essentially 8 of your 11 nailed from the very start. There hasn't been perhaps much room for being creative. And you can kind of say as well, due to how well Haaland has just trundled along and just been a bit of a juggernaut, that those who were trying to be creative with captaincy were routinely punished. So I think it was a season where your scope to differentiate was quite low because we were all fishing. I always say, use the analogy of kind of First Nation people fishing for ice fishing in kind of a small hole. And we're all fishing in the same small hole. It felt like that hole was even smaller, and we were all catching the same fish this year more than ever before. So I don't know. Maybe that there's something to be said for that sort of key asset staying power being so true. And it just made me think of, at the start of the season, that for many, many weeks, we had no moves to make. We were thinking about bringing in a 4.5 million forward, not to waste the transfer. And later on in the season, yes, we had moves to make, but it was quite quite a march of obviousness. It wasn't anything particularly sort of debonair about a lot of the moves we were making. And if you did make a debonair move, you were punished. Look at me buying Lewis Dunk, the most debonair of all things you could have done. So, yeah, I mean, anything in that one, I think there's definitely something to be said about the lack of spread.
Yeah, I think it all bleeds into kind of what we were saying before, A, pricing and B, fixtures. It just took some people out of the equation. Again, slightly freaky for this season. So I'll be interested to see whether it holds true to the same extent next season, because I don't see a lot of these things happening again. But it really is just a question of how strong kind of the awareness around EO and content creation and all of that kind of stuff hold. I don't know where at the moment. It's difficult for me to tell the balance between the two as to the influence on that.
I just think there's definitely, and this is from speaking to friends who are, Matt's in the Elite 64, for example, and a few other people that I know who are very good managers, who at the start of the season, remember there was that kind of movement to have Kane as your placeholder and then flipping over to Haaland in game week 2, and people who didn't start with Jesus and went with Saka and Martinelli instead. Now, if you didn't go with those moves, really, at those players really early on, you were behind. And certainly the sentiment from people who didn't do that, and they have been playing catch-up since the very early days, it was very difficult to kind of do anything when that happened. So, yeah, I mean, it's certainly an interesting season in terms of making up ground. I suppose from a content creator point of view as well, it's been quite a difficult year for many content creators. And you've also seen kind of this growth of other content creators out of nowhere. And I do wonder whether, because it was quite straightforward, it became a bit of a grifter's paradise. It was often impossible to make a bad call as a content creator. Believe me, I tried. I tried very hard to make a bad call. I did it every week. It felt a bit of a different season to be trying to, I don't know what we do. Do we commentate on it? Do we observe it? Do we analyze it? It felt like a very sort of, in some ways, straightforward season. In other ways, sort of frustratingly uncomplex season. I know those two things sound the same, but there's definitely, as straightforward can be fine, like popcorn mode. But in other ways, it's kind of like, oh, it's annoying. There's nothing else we can talk about here because it was so, the writing was on the wall with so much of it already.
Yeah. I do feel like we've regurgitated a few of these themes just because they're so pertinent every single week, which.
Yeah. 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 Cool. All right. Well, that's the season that was. See you later, 2022-2023. Predictions 2023-24. I've got three of them, Lucy, which you may have seen. but I wanted to kind of get your take on them as your final sort of words here. The first one, Liverpool and Chelsea become massively FPL relevant. Not that Liverpool were ever FPL irrelevant, but I think they're going to be the two teams that are going to, I guess, dictate a lot of people's fortunes in FPL next year. Liverpool in particular, I'm kind of singling out as a team we're going to be tripled up on a lot of the year. A weakened team in the Europa League last year, like Arsenal last year, sorry. Full pelt in the league. If they're not in a funk, they're established under Klopp, and they only finished 4 points behind Newcastle in fourth. So it won't take much for them to be challenging again. I wouldn't be surprised if Salah, Trent and Gakpo end up in maybe Jota, but maybe Gakpo end up in those people's teams in game week one and have real staying power next year, because I think that Liverpool will really go for it. And if there's a kind fixture run, then I think that that will be absolutely fine. And the other one's Chelsea. So you're always looking for a team and don't have any Europe to worry about and are nonetheless kind of full of quality players who have underperformed the year before. I think that is Chelsea at the moment. If there's any signs of consistency under Pochettino, so he has been confirmed as their manager, then they'll become massively interesting. Although James from Planet FPL says it may be a case of having to wait and see from the Spurs experience. So lots of chopping and changing of players to be expected. And it may take up to kind of, you know, 3 or 4 months to find an identity there. But I do think that those two teams are going to be the teams, the obvious teams that are going to make up certainly kind of by the midway point of the season, the backbone of our teams. Straightforward, or any other teams you'd add in there? Or
I was just going to ask, do you foresee them having, I mean, Chelsea seem quite obvious for price drops. Do you see Liverpool getting any price drops?
Yes and no. I don't think Salah will. I think this has been Trent's worst season for a long while. I wonder whether that's going to be reflected or whether the name recognition is going to be kind of shown in that. I think maybe the area of interest will be pick three, because I don't know if Gakpo is going to be reassigned as being a forward. I'm sure he will be. But imagine him playing the Firmino role is going to be quite interesting in the middle of the front three. He could be quite cheap. I don't know what's going to happen with Nunez and Jota, for example. But
the return of Luis Diaz as well.
Yeah, and then Luis Diaz as well be like a new signing. He probably won't see a price rise. So you may feasibly see him again at 8.0, 7.5. And again, if they get good fixtures, I think it might be a case of picking the third Liverpool asset. And there'll be a bit of rotation there. It'll be a bit of an interesting one to see what happens. But yeah, trying to fit, especially if people kind of think, oh, you know, I want Kane Haaland, that's all I want after last season's shenanigans, then I think it might be really interesting to see how Salah does, because the man's the monster, as we'll speak about, I'm sure, later on. But on that, the second prediction is that the what we've learned this year will become irrelevant in terms of what the season's going to be like. So I saw, I mentioned this actually on Twitter, that if it wasn't for Erling Haaland, everyone would be kind of extolling the virtues of Harry Kane. And I saw that Seb Vassell was saying this as well this week, that next year, maybe everyone's going to be saying, oh, Haaland and Kane are musts. And it might be true if the template to begin with, but I just don't think that next year will be anything like this year, because this year was nothing like the year before and so on and so forth. It's basically that old adage that most wars are lost because the generals on the losing side have planned for the battle before rather than battle that's to come. And all you need to remember is that Salah, Trent and Robertson were nailed in all of our teams at the start of the season, or Diaz or Ito Robertson. Positive the season. Big at the back, season keepers, and then quickly fell into abeyance. So yeah, I just think that, yeah, it's obviously nice to look at a season as a cold case, but I wouldn't kind of try to draw too much from just this last season alone to try to kind of say this how next year is going to go. It simply won't go that way. And I know that's a bit of a generic, easy prediction to say I've got right, but I think it's just one that's worth mentioning.
I would agree. Don't have anything else to add.
Perfect. And the final one is that Roberto De Zerbi is going to piss FPL managers off big time. I think he's going to be the biggest fly in the ointment since Pep Guardiola. there's this kind of proclivity to unpredictably rotate, as we saw towards the end. And because his setup is so systems-based rather than sort of personnel-based, the players are kind of cogs in the machine, a bit like the Guardiola system. And, you know, Europe transfers in. I think all of these things are going to make him incredibly irritating, incredibly unpredictable, especially if Brighton still kind of garner our attention. It may be that you end up with a kind of a Man City style situation where there's one or two players who are absolutely nailed and produce, like a Haaland or, I don't know, like a Matoma that you just keep, and the rest of the team you just ignore. Because even though, yes, when on their day they're doing very well, you've just got no kind of confidence in the longevity or is their kind of expected starts. So yeah, I think the Zerbi is going to piss off a lot of managers next year and be a massive fly in the ointment for us.
I think so. I think because we've seen when the fixtures have kind of become more condensed, he likes rotation because he likes to keep his team fresh. And if they've got Europa League to worry about, that's going to just intensify. And I would say their squad's going to have to expand as well to deal with the demands that Europa put on a not top six team. I think we've seen that time and time again, that you need to have a fairly large squad to deal with the demands of Europa. So I think that's going to step up and that's going to be more and more of a problem, which is frustrating because I think they will, as you said, on their day, yield lots of points.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting because, as you said, they're not top six. And yes, there's definitely already a couple of interesting signings coming in there, like a fancy football manager hero, Mahmoud Dahoud, who's joining from Dortmund, apparently. Wow, a great player. According to Football Manager, I've never seen him actually play in real life, but hey, I've seen him play many a virtual game anchoring my midfield. And but yeah, it'd be fascinating to see what happens with them. And fascinating to see where their players end up, really, because you've got Matoma and McAllister. McAllister won't be there, but Matoma and dare I say it, Solly March and Cizo, Evan Ferguson. Where are they going to end up? If Ferguson's 5.56, I mean, surely that could be of great interest to those managers. It may just be that you end up being really annoyed that, hey, it's a plum game, Luton at home, and Welbeck is playing instead of Ferguson, despite Ferguson scoring a hat-trick in the last game, just cause De Zerbi going De Zerbi.
Yeah. Right. It'll be interesting. I don't like to do the speculation about, where Brighton players might end up or where they go, because I know what it feels like to have been on the end of that position, so I'm not going to speculate, but obviously we can expect quite a lot of turnover there over the summer, I think.
Yeah, respect your fellow South Coast rivals. Right, okay, let's go on to the end of season awards. So there's a few sort of bits and pieces here, and I've got kind of obviously positions and things, but a couple of other bits just so we can again reflect on some players and maybe some teams as well in terms of analysing the season that was. The first one is a flop of the season. I guess I mean this in an FPL sense rather than kind of a football sense. So obviously the answer is Chelsea, to everyone's great joy, and Frank Lampard's to have won less games than Sean Dyche. Oh dear. Oh God. God.
Let's all laugh at Frank Lampard. This is the segment now. Go.
He's going to get another job, isn't he, in the Premier League at some point? I'm
if
sure
he does, will. Someone needs to be shot.
Oh God. Well, either that or we'll end up at Southampton, bringing Mark Hughes's, sit in Mark Hughes's office and be like, yeah. Right. Flop of the season. Views?
I think it's quite obvious. And maybe he's been such a flop. We've forgotten about him, but I think it's Son. I think given that we've kind of become used to Kane and Son, working as a pair, both doing well out of the relationship, and Kane obviously has done brilliantly, and it's just so obvious that Son's done terribly. And maybe FPL inflated our expectations by making him £12 million, maybe, but I can't believe how significant the drop-off has been.
Yep, I had Son as one of my options. So, 152 points following two seasons, more than happily in the 200 club. And I think he came down, I think he was player of the season last year on this very same award ceremony. So, yeah, amazing how far he's kind of faded into irrelevance this year. 10 goals and 6 assists after 3 consecutive years, double digits for both. I mean, a case can be made for him being afflicted by Spurs' malaise, but Kane is right there, you know, who has done all right, despite the fact that, you know, Spurs have been not very good for most of the year. So, yeah, I mean, that's certainly a large flop. The other ones, I suppose, Chelsea, Liverpool, big at the back, potentially. So, you know, Cancelo, Trent and Robertson was how those people started the season. But in parallel with the pricing being funky and assets like Saliba and Trippier coming to the fore, we saw value supplant price. And I wonder whether there's a shout out for Cancelo here as well. So he was the highest owned defender in game week one prior to being surprisingly jettisoned in January. And with him, City's defence became mostly irrelevant in FPL, apart from if you were selling Ake, because it was astonishing that no City defender scored over 100 points. So maybe there's a case for that. But I mean,
but when he was in the league, he was good, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was all right. Yeah. So I mean, it's hard to. I think he got me 70 points or something at the start of the time he was in. So I mean, it's very difficult to look past on for that, unfortunately, from the Jets' point of view. Right. Next one, then, the flip side of that. Overachiever of the year. Now, I guess most people will look at Trippier, won't they? But anyone else for you?
I think I'm going for Martinelli. I picked him with game week one, and I think everyone with a stats brain could see he had good underlying data in previous seasons, albeit not the minutes. But I never expected him to get 2 points short of the 200 club, which he'd have hit without that late season injury. And I think to do that from a baseline of £6 million is insane. Even if you felt he'd been underpriced at kind of our previous expectations, I think he surpassed all of those. So I think it's Martinelli for me. I was going to say Trippier, and his first half of the season was ridiculous. He only blanked 3 times in the first 21 game weeks, and 14 of those were more than the baseline 6 points per defensive return. But he just started to annoy me because he just hasn't delivered that in the last sort of 10 or 12 weeks. So yeah. I can't give it to him. He's let me down. So I'll give it to Martinelli.
Okay. Now, similar kind of line of four. I actually went for Odegaard here. So creeping, he got into the 200 club. And I think 130 points or so last season. I don't think anyone saw any real danger of this happening. But there's 15 goals, 8 assists. And the clincher for me over Martinelli is that he got the third most double-digit hauls this season of 9.
So I'm not the double-digit haul obsession again.
I know, but it is something which is genuinely quite substantial for an individual player's overall outcomes, I guess, because it just kind of, the explosivity of a player is something that was just much vaunted. But doing that in 9 out of 38 is still pretty good, especially if you're a 6.5 million midfielder. But yeah, I mean, obviously, there's a case for Martinelli too. But neither of them could do it. And the other one that I was going to mention is a shout-out to Marcus Rashford, just because grossly underpriced after an indifferent 2021-22. As I said earlier, he only scored 63 points. But he recorded his first 200 club finish this season. And the 17 goals, 7 assists is actually his second-best output in terms of returns. So yeah, a real mockery of that 6.5 million start price. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy to give it to Martinelli. It certainly makes sense. I mean, Martinelli actually later on is nominated for another one for me. So shockingly, it's midfielder. So, you know, this is about me fitting in players where I can.
But, hey. I mean, it's surprising how many people made this 200 club. Given we had that little monitoring podcast not that long ago saying, oh, a couple of these might make it. Quite a lot of those midfielders made it at the end, didn't they?
They did. Just Martinelli's injury at the very last pipped him at the final hurdle. Positions him. Goalkeeper of the year. Raya, the top scoring goalkeeper. Does he get it by default?
The thing that will stick in my head for Raya is when he conceded 3 goals to Brighton and still managed to get 6 points because he made 11 saves.
Yep.
I mean, that's just brilliant.
Legend. Yeah. I mean, what I find funny about thinking about Raya is that at the start of the season, we were all saying, this guy, 4.5 million, what a bargain.
No, and we actually made a pre-season call that was right.
I know, but none of us picked him up until later on in the season, you know? And it's one of those things where if you look at goalkeepers, you sometimes just need to have some of them for the fixture runs, like Kepa for after the wildcard. What was really interesting was looking at the expected goals prevented for goalkeepers, because Bernd Leno was massively out in front for that. Absolutely huge. And then Alisson was second for on that measure. So you could maybe look at one of them, especially Leno next year. I don't think we'll be given a rise from 4.5. So I think he'd be a really interesting goalkeeper for next year. Raya, we don't know where he'll be, because I think Brentford have just signed Flecker, I think his name is, Dutch goalkeeper. So he'll be probably moving on to pastures new and probably also be given an upgrade in price. But
although Raya's agent was saying that he's happy to sit on the bench this season if they feel that he's been priced out of a move, they'll just wait for the free, apparently. So there we go.
Right. Well, there we go indeed. I mean, the goalkeeper is one of those where I've always, the last two seasons, I've just struggled to get it right, because there's never been, of the days of Nick Pope being the obvious 4.5. They're gone now. So I don't know.
I think on the goalkeepers, I mean, part of the reason you didn't have to use transfers and part of the reason we didn't really have like an obvious pick that we were gravitating towards was because we normally rely on wild cards and resets to change goalkeepers, because we had an additional one there.
Yeah.
It made things a little easier, didn't it, for kind of transitioning between fixtures. So I think that's probably why that hasn't had an obvious pick in quite the same way.
Yeah, you could chunk it up a little easier, couldn't you? No, defenders. So no defender made the 200 club this year. Trent and Cancelo last year. You know, Trent's done it in the past. Robertson's done it in the past. Closest was Trippier, who kind of limped towards Trippier. It and never got there. I guess he wins it by default, doesn't he? I can't think of any other player.
No one came close to Trippier, I don't think. That's pretty boring, but we've already got Trippier. I'll just say Trippier,
Shout out to Ben White for finishing second at 4.5 million. That's unexpected, but hey. Midfielder. So I mentioned Martinelli would probably be one of the nominees. But I think the winner, and I know it sounds like giving Pep Guardiola Manager of the Year again.
You haven't given it to Salah, have you?
He won the midfield 200 club for the 6th year in a row. Second time. It's only the second time he's not made 20 goals, but he's the second best assist tally of his Liverpool career. He's second for double-digit hauls this season. I mean, he was irrelevant for a lot of the season, but the guy still scored the most points in midfield, and he's just a machine, an FPL machine, honestly. I'd love to give it to Martinelli, really. This is the start price of 6.0. The season keeperness, although we did ourselves out of it.
Talk about that.
Yeah, at the price, it's got to be highly considered. I think objectively you've got to give it to Salah. But I mean, who did you have as your alternative if you weren't going to give it to Salah?
It was just going to be Odegaard. So really, we've just rotated the Martinelli Odegaard thing. So. It's basically Arsenal players or Salah, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. But there's nothing particularly coming to mind for me. What else would people be screaming? Because, you know, you've got Foden and KDB. If we did this in game week 17, sure, absolutely. The Brighton mids, I mean, Solly March. I mean, I'm never endorsing that one. And
don't factor in that he was cheated out of a goal. I would just like to.
I know. See, the guy who came second said that the reason why he came second overall was because he captained Solly March that week.
No, he captained him. Oh man, that's tough. Although you never know what you did.
But there's loads of other sort of little bits and pieces. But you know, that is I guess the legitimate goal, which has been scrubbed out. Which has subsequently been given back to, I think, March anyway. So,
yeah, I think a lot of the Brighton picks really were only kind of second half of the season picks, weren't they? So I don't think I can give it to them as much as they were.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. And forward of the season. So player of the season is obviously Haaland.
We're trying to be different with this category.
So I'm going to give the forward to Kane. I think record of 25 Premier League games he scored in, 7 points off Haaland, so his best ever FPL season, 263, and he broached the 30 goal barrier for the first time ever. Not his best in terms of overall attacking returns, so it was 37 in 2020-21, 23 goals and 14 assists, but still an absolute monster. And if despite playing for a totally desiccated club this campaign, he did really, really well. A paragon of talisman theory, and it's probably good to give him recognition, even if he did disappear from loads of our teams, as we've mentioned, because he didn't have doubles. But you know, for the final day, that guy lost me two mini leagues. So, hey, but yeah, I mean, wherever he ends up, I suspect he may end up probably still at Spurs unless Real Madrid come in with a £150 million offer. I mean, yeah, it's just been an exemplary season for Harry Kane, hasn't it? So well worth mentioning.
Yeah, I feel a bit sorry for Harry Kane because I think he's basically been cheated out of a lot of plaudits and a lot of awards because Erling Haaland exists. I think it's really positive from a Harry Kane perspective as well is that he's started playing most games in a season. I think there was a period 3 or 4 years ago where we were worried that he kept picking up these ankle injuries. And
yeah, his annual injury was a thing, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and he was only kind of hitting, you know, 18 to 25 goals and everyone was like, well, is he over the hill? Is he done? But, you know, what an outstanding season. So I don't have a lot to add on that one. The only thing I was going to say, just trying to be kind of outside the premium category, because I feel like we've probably given a little bit more weight to kind of value in the other categories, was just to mention the now disgraced, but otherwise very good Ivan Toney, who kept putting points on the board while most of us were scared to own him with the ban pending. But 20 goals this season, which is a big improvement on last year's 12. And I think he'll be an interesting one for the second half of the next season when he's back from his ban. And I think between him and Mitrovic at the beginning of the season and Watkins and Wilson during the second half of the season, and Isak as well, I think it was good to see the forward category revitalised a bit this season. I think there were the periods in the previous season where we just thought there wasn't really much point in the category. So I think that was really good and really interesting, and in a different season that might have led to more opportunities and more diversity.
Yeah, I mean, Watkins in particular has been really interesting to watch next year under Emery. Ings being shunted and Emery kind of saying, you know, you're my main man, and under Emery the guy's been pretty much unstoppable. And obviously missed the pen against Liverpool towards the end of the season, but still scored against Brighton, still returned against Brighton. And it's just his best ever FPL return, 178 points. I just wonder if he had a full season under Emery, what he could possibly do. I mean, he could be a sneak pick for the 200 club next year. Really could. Because he's got the propensity, Ings style, to go on these runs, as we saw earlier on in the season. And I just wonder whether we might see something like that happen for Watkins next year. So all it will take is him kind of having a run like this. It was a game week 21 up until game week 31 where he just kind of scored every week. I mean, all it will take is one of those to kind of really get him into everyone's mind. And something you've got to play kind of 50-60% owned overall. If this does that very early on, if they get good fixtures early, he could be like a massive factor.
It's all going to come down to the fixtures, isn't it?
Absolutely. But yeah, I think he's a really interesting one. I think he's one that's definitely kind of kicked on. And I think he may well kind of end up kind of being more than 7.5 he starts the season on. But yeah, player of the season is Erling Haaland. I guess it's just the impact of having a focal point, the biggest team in the league or the best team in the league, which has been lacking one in the past. It's just crazy. And I guess I approach this from a talisman theory point of view. But the transformation from a talismanless team to a talismanful team is clear to see. I mean, what I used to see in talisman theory is that you'd have City players dominating the top 20 for net points minus appearance of attacking data. None of them coming in to the top 10, top 20 in the percentage distribution, which signifies talisman, because obviously they're all sharing it. And then enter Haaland and have him come in and do what he's done. And within the peculiarity of this season and creating this sort of vacuum of EO, I think that he's overshadowed everything this year. Where I know that Salah in the past made captaincy moot for years, but this year, kind of that consistent EO vacuum that Haaland was playing in front of the most creative midfield in Europe, I think got the most big chances this year, shockingly. Plus, you know, that EO. And then that Norwegian meat shield just has to be player of the year. And I think we'll all remember this one as the year when he was first here. And that thing's changed. I don't know if that's going to be the way it's going to be forever. But I feel like next year you're looking at a player who's going to be owned again game week one by 80% of managers. No matter what the first game week is, I think that he's already kind of most people's game week one captain, which sounds ridiculous. We've never had that in the past, but with Haaland, there's that kind of quasi guarantee of goals. And maybe it comes back to what you said about Kane being a bit hard done by, because Kane also does that. But yeah, with Haaland, it's just that kind of that star quality, I suppose, the Premier League. It's got to be Haaland, I think.
Yeah, I can't really disagree. It will be interesting next season if Kane does get a move, as to whether that changes the dynamic, because I think you're quite right that at the moment, as things stand, Haaland is the obvious fixture-blind game week one captain. So it will be interesting if Kane does get a move, if that might change the balance slightly. But yeah, I can't really add a lot more. Haaland has to change the game.
No. Excellent. Well, that's your lot. One last order of business, saying goodbye to Lucy. This is it. It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for agreeing to come on. I was never in any doubt about the decision to ask you to join. It's been great podding with you. I'll miss you next year. It's just a shame we couldn't carry on, but I understand your reasons for it. How are you feeling about everything?
I feel oddly at peace with the decision, which is good. I think, as we said earlier, I think the test will be when everyone's making teams as to whether how I feel then. But I feel very, very privileged still that I was ever asked to join. So thank you very much. I think I've enjoyed being more reflective about how I play. And I think we've probably coached each other through some kind of dodgy weeks and tricky decisions. So yeah, it's been really good. So thank you for that. How are you feeling about next season?
Well, I mean, I've got three options here. I mean, I've obviously been feeling a bit disaffected with the season myself. So there's three things I can do. One is give up entirely. Two, come back on my own. So loads of Tomologues. Or three, find a new co-host. But before I decide what I'm going to do, I think the first thing I'll do is have a proper summer break. So we were saying before we came on that I've never really done a summer break. So when you first started, I like kind of barraged you with a Gantt chart of timings when FPL was opening, and here's all the summer specials, and here's Talisman Theory, and here's when we do all these pods. And I've done that for years, and I never really had a proper summer break. So I think I'm going to take one. I'm going to enjoy being a dad and not worry about this nonsense for a while, and which may maybe lead to me reducing my alcoholic intake a little bit. No summer specials, no Talisman Theory. Sorry, I'm sure someone will steal it, but please credit me if you do. I'm looking at you, green team. You know who you are. Put it this way. If Lucy, you were keen to be continuing, I'd be considering about second thought. So you can probably tell which way I'm leaning about everything that's going to happen. So yeah, that's it. It's been a difficult year. I've not really enjoyed it as much as I have, not because of you, but because of this subject matter that we've been commenting on. There's only so many times there's only 50 shades of grey that you can go through on something which is grey, dull and boring. So, you know, it's been challenging, but hopefully next year won't be the same, because this year was, I think, I'm betting on this year being particularly peculiar. And I think, I'm hoping they do change something in the off season, but I very much doubt that. Do you have any advice for the next co-host so they don't leave after just 1 year?
Well, I think it's a personal thing. I think probably I'd come to a point in life more generally where it seemed like a kind of extra that I probably didn't need. I think, assuming that things change next season, I think there's lots of reasons to be optimistic. And also, to anyone that does take over, I would just try to keep Tom feeling upbeat about these things, because even when he has a good week, he finds a way to turn it into a bad week. That's all I've got, really.
It's modest, it's humbleness, humility.
That's what it is.
I just hate people who go the other way and get too full of themselves. Like, it's really not me. That's all I will say without naming names. Right, okay. That's it.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone. We were Who Got the Assist. You can find Tom on Twitter at WGTA_FPL. And for the final time, you can find me at Lucy Hynett.
Yeah. Well, hit those 5-star reviews, please. I think it's probably worth it after the long season we've had. So yeah, that's it, the end. Thanks so much for listening. Hope we assist you this season. I'm off to have a beer, edit this, and enjoy my summer. Should WGTA return, I'll speak to you in early July when the game reopens for 2023-2024 season. I probably will, let's face it. See ya.
It's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.